This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today we are talking to the author, Simon Jones. Let's jump into the intro and I'll tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue.
What's up, people? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit subscribe, hit the bell, all of those buttony thingamajiggies. My name is James. I'm your host for today. And I also run, along with my amazing partner, Sherry, a consultancy in health, safety, fire and culture type work. So if you need any help, whether it's technical safety, cultural change or fire, I'm pretty sure there's something we can do for you. So check out riskfluentltd.com. So today we are talking to the author, Simon Jones. If you haven't read his book, check it out. All the links will be in the description below. But it's all about selling safety. So I read the book and we got Simon on and here we are. Let's jump into the conversation. You can find out what I thought of the book and Simon's general kind of journey and thoughts and lessons and passions and so on. We just generally have kind of a good chit chat about some things I found in the book. Let's jump into the episode and I'll see you at the other end. Hello, mate. How are we doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Yourself?
Good. I'm grand. Thank you, mate. I am grand. Thank you very much. In case anyone doesn't know who you are, do you want to give yourself a little introduction and then we'll crack on?
Yes, my name is Simon. I am currently head of health and safety for a large company called NRS Healthcare. They're a big supplier to the NHS. I've been dabbling in safety now for about 10 years, doing various bits and roles in different industries. And before that, I was a police officer with Merseyside Police, as you can hear from my guttural accent. And that was me. I got injured about 10, 11, probably longer now, years ago, and wound up a police pensioner at the grand old age of 35. So I decided to reinvent myself and fell into safety. But yeah, that's me in a nutshell. And I've gone and written a book.
How dare you? Which I have here.
There it is.
Thank you for sending that over.
You're very welcome.
I'm just whizzing through my notes I made because it was actually a while ago that I read it. And I remember one thing he said was it's quite an easy read. Like you went before you sent it to me, you were like, you can bang it out in probably like an afternoon, which I did. You might feel uncomfortable with this, but I read it in two baths. So I had one bath, read half of it, another bath a week later and read the rest of it. Don't know how you feel about me reading your book naked.
I don't feel anything at all. It's more importantly, how did you feel? You know, you probably had spent some time cultivating that moustache, if nothing else. I've never had that before. Read it in two baths. Yeah, I might have to put that down as a review. Read it in two baths. Pretty good, that.
Do you want me to put it on Amazon for you?
Stick it on. I love it. You know, you read, I've read it. Make it stand out. You can read it in the bath. I love it.
Oh, there you go. That, do you know what? That needs to happen now. Like, I'm going to have to write that on an Amazon review or something.
I'd love it because, you know, so some people have been lovely putting reviews on and it really does help with the reviews, I've got to say. And I'm going to say 99% of them have been positive. One fella absolutely hated it. But he's in the minority, thank God. But yeah, I'd love that, to see that. Read it in the bath, you know. Do you have some candles out and all that? Was it a romantic evening for yourself?
I'm not going to say I've never bathed with candles because I have bathed with candles, but that particular one was a very simple. I'd done a bike ride the day before, though both of those I've been getting back on the bike. I just needed to soak the muscles, mate. So it was nothing fancy. It was just me, the water, and you in a book.
Lovely. Me, you, in a book, in a bath.
That's it, mate. That's it.
Some sore muscles. Yeah, it there's a review right there. There's probably a chapter here coming somewhere. So I'm writing another one, believe it or not. And there's probably a chapter here coming from that. Me, you, in the bath.
Yeah, for sure.
That must make a note of that.
And to be honest, though, if it's not in the next book, like, I'm really, really upset.
Well, it'll have to be now. It'll have to be. We're about 50% of the way through it, but I could, you know, there's always space for more, isn't there? Maybe you're in the bath. I love it.
My target with this book was to write it in 4 baths.
well, yeah, as long as you take it in the shower, you know, wouldn't work in the shower, would it? Wouldn't work, just wouldn't work. Maybe they're waterproof Kindle or something, I don't know. Somebody sent me a picture of somebody reading it near the pool somewhere in Spain, I think it was. So, you know, it's international.
Yeah. So, let run me through. The book is called The Safety Salesman Shoot from the Lip, The Real Bottom Line on Selling Safety. Why did you feel like you needed to write this book?
I wrote it because I wanted to write for a long time, post-policing, really, because I've got, I think, an abundance of tales that people may find interesting. And I tried for ages to write something around policing, and it just wasn't happening at all. And this came about more from, I was like blogging on LinkedIn, because I didn't exist on social media for obvious reasons when I was, you know, in the cops, and I didn't do anything social media wise. But I've got on LinkedIn and whatnot, and I've been putting stuff out on that. And I started blogging anyway, and I just started writing a couple of little tales, and people, mainly from the armed forces, picked them up and quite enjoyed them. And somebody said, some idiot said, you should put these in a book. So I started doing it. And it sort of came together from there. But at the time, it was just like a mishmash of stuff. It wasn't really cohesive. Some may say it still isn't. But I spoke to some like proper authors who were really helpful, and they helped me sort of pull it together. But the safety salesman bit was all from like a line that was said to me many years ago, that like, it was about policing at the time. It was like, you're selling something that no one wants to buy. And safety, I think, is a lot like that. You're selling something in your message, maybe, that a lot of people don't want to buy. And that could be because it's boring, it's too long-winded, maybe the way it's you know, put across to people. But that sort of resonated with me, and policing was like that. And certainly more when I went in the CID, and you had to be a different kind of, have a different kind of approach, really, to being in uniform. It's a very different role. And that's where it came from. Shoot from the Lip is obviously, you know, because I'm from the Merseyside area, so I'm always gabbing. The next one's also got a mouth connotation to it, the title of it. I won't tell you what that is yet, it's a surprise. But that's where it's coming from. Bottom line, again, linked to sales and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's why I chose it. Even like the cover art, mate, it's all DIY, and it's all done, you know, by me and Mrs. Jones at home. That's just like a bit of a cheesy image, isn't it, of a classic sort of safety, a salesperson, you know, it's all tongue in cheek. I didn't think there was anything else. No one else was really doing anything like it, probably for a good reason. And I just thought, it's me, and I'm going to put it in, you know, and that's it. That's a long answer, isn't it?
No, well, it was fine. We do need to clarify one thing. Can you say noodle and then please say Google? Because I still don't think they rhyme, even with a Scouse accent.
Noodle and Google, there you go, it rhymes straight away.
It's a rhyme.
We're talking alliteration here, you know, we've got GCSE English going on and all, so you pulled me up on that early doors. I thought that's not the only thing you took away, noodle and Google. God, I don't even remember writing it, I had to find it. You do what you can, don't you? You do what you can.
You kept saying it, like, I think the first couple of chapters, like, said it a few times, and I was like, what's it doesn't
Noodle, rhyme. Google, I think it does. I think Noodle, it's my book, so Google. I think one of them.
I think even in a Scouse accent, I'm Noodle, No, I'm not feeling that one, mate.
No, well, you've got your vowels. Ooh, you go ooh. You're going like that, and he's going ooh. You know, like that. Anyway.
Oh, fucking hell.
Can you swear on this? You just swore. Can you swear again? You be myself, can I?
You don't listen to the podcast. Fucking hell, Simon.
I've heard it.
So I think I've heard the you know, you're trying to sell something that nobody wants. And I think that's really interesting. And there was part of me that's like, there was part of me that kind of reading it. And it's funny because I had a very similar conversation the other day with a couple of people that did a podcast around a similar topic or a same theme of the topic, but about a different topic, if it makes sense. Like, and there was a vibe in me that kind of was a bit, and this is not criticism, it's just kind of how I felt, like, are we still having this conversation? Like, there was part of me, like, are we still having to say this stuff? Like, yeah. Let's do some safety work that isn't pissing everybody off. Let's do some safety work that actually, and I was a bit like, oh God, I'm kind of just fed up of having this conversation. And then somebody did say to me, it was Elisa that said to me in this call, well, clearly we do need to still have this conversation because there are a lot of people that still don't think about safety the way that we might think about safety. So we're kind of in a bit of an echo chamber. Like, for me, it was like everybody I talks about safety like this, like how I talk about it, because they listen to a podcast or I engage with them. You know, we talk a lot. We're probably friends or whatever. So we're in a bit of an echo chamber. So my initial reaction when reading the book was like, God, do we still need to have this conversation? But obviously you felt like we needed to still, because you urged to read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's born out of going to certain institutional meetings and things like this, and there is just a sort of still vibe of a grey person who is very technically competent, I'm sure, but just can't speak to people. And you think, I'd love to see you out maybe on a site or even in the boardroom maybe or somewhere like that, and just to see how you come across, because you're boring me to tears here. And you know, there is still sadly a space for it, which is why I wrote it. It's dead interesting, you know, you said that, because yesterday I took on a new mentee, because I'm really interested in obviously bringing people on and bringing people in, and young people as well, you know, younger than me. I'm 43, you know, this is a second job for me. People who are like in their early 20s who are wanting to go into this game. So this lad come on board with me yesterday, and the first thing he said to me was, what other qualifications do you think I should get? And he's got a raft of them, this lad, you know, he's done well already. And I won't name him, but I said, it's not all about getting all the qualifications, mate. I said, can you speak to people? Can you? And it opened his eyes. I said, you know, have you got line management responsibilities? Are you looking after other people? Have you thought about it? You've got to develop like that, because there's too many people still in there doing this who are, I've got all the technical wizardry you could imagine, but I just can't imagine them ever speaking to anybody and being understood. Because if I'm getting bored and I've got at least a semi-interest in this game, what's the rest of them doing? And I still think, mate, there is a lot of people who are like that, who can't speak to people. And that's come from policing. If you couldn't get your, you know, if you talk in a certain way, and I put a big bit in my next book about this, about being in a courtroom setting and being able to get your points across like that, because policing was very, at times, stilted in its delivery, how they trained you to deliver evidence, how they trained you to present. It worked up until a certain point, but it was much better, I found, later on, again, when I went in the CID and did different things, to be more of myself. To give, and I think there's a lot of that for safety people. You know, there's people like us, yes, you've got, you know, who bring personality into it and maybe some humour and that, and a human, rather than, you know, I've got all these letters after my name and yeah, but it's pretty boring what you're saying, you know.
Mm.
It's sad that it's still like that, but I think it is still like that.
Mm.
In quite a big area of this
game. Yeah. There was you're very much, I felt like you were in the book trying to do something very similar to what you just said and to what we tried to do on Rebound and Safety, is put across that human approach. Like there is, and I saw that review, I think you shared it on LinkedIn, that like negative, if you wanted to use that word, constructive criticism feedback that you had. And part of it was he clearly didn't like you bounce around a lot with your references, and like it is literally like in the nicest way possible. It's kind of like if I was to summarize the book very well, and this is positive, I would say it's kind of like a mental with ADHD.
Quote, ding.
It's like there's loads of, like, for me the book was like something I would give to someone who's like fresh into the profession. Like it's a real nice gateway book into thinking a little bit more beyond the technical side of safety and more holistically. But because you've got like literally random stories that are kind of, you put in context to it, but I felt that you were trying to communicate that safety professionals are human. I got that vibe from you. Is that right? Or
yes, very, very much so. I you know, I joke about it being tongue-in-cheek. I've purposely done it like that, where I'll go off on because I'm trying to make it human. So I've purposely structured that. And in the second book, I explain a little bit about that, because I laugh about that one star review because he hated it. He absolutely hated it, you know, to give it one out of, you know, and to bother his ass to even do it. You know, it must have affected him in a certain way, but I've structured it in that way, even like the slang that gets used and the, you know, the movie references and the pop culture thing, and it does sort of go off about that. I looked at like how Billy Connolly tells a joke almost, you know, he'll come all around the house and eventually he'll come back. It is just a way of getting across being human, and it's even written in that sort of conversational style.
Yeah.
And even to the point where I'll separate, because grammatically and it's wrong, and the paragraphs in it, you know, it's wrong how it's done, but it's written in that way, so it's easy to read. Like somebody said, go and put it on an audio book, and if I knew how to do it, I'd go and have a go. But I've thought about doing it that way for that reason. So to me, and you're right, it is about that. It's about, and I say it, it's about connection. And that's the best thing. If someone says to me, like even this with you, you know, there's just the connection there. That's it, it's the job done. I'm not giving you answers it's not a textbook. It's not that, it's just a bit of connection. Or you can, someone goes, well, I can relate to that. Loads of people say, well, I can relate to that. Mm. That's what I've wanted to do, because I thought that was missing, you know. And I appreciate that feedback there. You know, the human, that's good, that's perfect, that's what I wanted.
I totally got that vibe. Like I felt that you were trying to do it felt like the beginning of Rebound and Safety. Like, you know, if I go back to like the first couple of episodes of what we did, like it's uber, like it's like uber Rebound and Safety. There was like, it was kind of more, it was like me on steroids more than, you know what I mean? It was kind of like very much the same. Like I swear, but like I definitely swore more in those first few episodes to make a bit of a point. And it was purposeful to intently show everybody that we're human and we're not, oh, health and safety. And I'm reading a book and I was like, I'm totally getting the same vibe off of this.
Yeah, and that's good, and that's where I picked you up from, and other people. Some people, you know, I've picked up along the way, and they've been helpful, but perhaps they're not exactly my approach. But I picked yours up very early doors in it, which is why, you know, I reached out to you when I did. That's it. It's about being human. You know, it's about even to how you communicate with somebody. It's about that human element. There's not enough of that in safety. It's painted its picture of itself. It's a certain way. It's obsessed with rank almost in a way, isn't it? Even yeah, these technical grades, it's very similar to policing, mate. I'm telling you, very, very similar to it in a way. And you know, maybe that's what attracted me early on when I was thinking about a second career. But as I've gone along in it, I've gone, no, this is actually not right, because this isn't working. And there is a massive space for approaches like this that I think work. And if you can get younger people to do it like this, and I think that's the way forward, rather than these sort of grey, you know, you used a funny voice there. That's what I put on. That's just how for sure, you know. Yeah. You know, you did it then, and that's what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a lot of people still out there, mate, who do it like that. Where I am now, I took over something that was very like that, and people are physically and visibly shocked when I speak, and how I speak, and how I come across, and some of the things I say and do, you know. So now you say like it's sad that we still have to do it. I'm telling you, there is still a long way to go, I think.
Yeah, and it totally is. You know, like I say, we kind of, especially me, I can be very much in an echo chamber because of the style, and I would say the caliber of safety professional that we've surrounded ourselves with are people that are, in my opinion, a better safety professional because they're human. They're they've got loads of those social skills and so on and so forth. So I would say they're a higher caliber of safety professional, but whatever, you can debate how we like. Maybe caliber is not the right word. I'm digging myself a hole here. I'm just going to throw myself a rope and get out of that by changing the topic completely. There's something you said here on page 42 on one from the book, which I wanted to for us to discuss on, because it's kind of one of the things that we picked out of the problem you were trying to solve from the book around adding value. So it was a big vibe early on in the book of something that you're clearly passionate about. And there's a particular paragraph that I wanted to just kind of read out and then discuss. I want to give you an example of some customers I work with and my actually slightly difference of opinion on this. So you were talking about some context, as you were talking about basically adding value and so on. And you said, if the idea of safety is a bolt-on to make a tender or application look good, or the management system gets tucked away in some dusty files no one uses and it has zero value, and we're not interested in that. I agree. All right. If it's in a paper, if it's in covered in dust, there's no fucking point in it. Right. And there's so much in my career and now that I come across that is very much like that. It's covered in dust. Yeah. Interestingly, though, the mention of the tender application pricks my ears up as an example. Right. So there's something I think that, and you've probably come across it, but like this whole tribalism that we're seeing in safety of like new view, old view, safety one, safety two, which has completely missed the entire point of what that message is trying to communicate. But let's just park that for a second. What can tend to happen is you might read provocative one-liners from particularly one certain author who paints a very, I think, exaggerated picture of throwing all paperwork out the door as a case study, as an example, right? Now, there's some people that fucking walk on hot coals. Doesn't mean we're going to do it, right? Yeah. So, Denny, what that seemed to have caused is a lot of people that have gone down this route of saying, if it doesn't add value, would be the phrase that they would say. And when they define value, what they mean is, if it doesn't positively manage the risk of safety to the shop floor people, the people, as you say, facing the risk, then it's not adding value. I'm not saying that's what you were saying in the book. This is just what my brain went with this. And of the people that do that, like if it's not making work safer, there's no point in doing this. I'm not sure I agree with that. So there's an example I would give in that when we started Risk Fluent, I wasn't very comfortable with doing these. I'm not going to name the companies because I just can't be arsed with the bullshit off the back of it. The kind of construction accreditation services. Let's go with that. You probably know what I'm talking about, where it's send me some paperwork, check, you've got that paperwork, check, you've got, it's got no relation to the shop floor whatsoever. So it's very easy for us to go, adds no value. And when I started full-time consulting this year, I did exactly the same. I don't want to do that shit. It's bollocks. It bores the shit out of me. I don't want to do it. However, the customer can't tender for the job if they do that, if they don't do it. So it does bring value to the company. And I don't think that's what you were saying in the book. What I think you were saying is about, does it add some kind of value? Yes. But I think we've got to be very careful how we communicate this message as what's value, because value might not just be making the job safer.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think to be effective in this game, certainly in perhaps in a more senior role or as a consultant, maybe, I think you've got to recognize that you can add value in other ways as well. And this is where I'm coming about. This is what I said about being a salesman or a salesperson, that you've got to understand there's other value that safety has. It does have commercial value. You spoke there. It does have commercial value. And that's a skill that if you can, you know, you can get your head around some of these, you know, accreditation schemes, like them or not like them, they exist and a lot of clients want them. So if you can learn how to maybe do those and present those, you are adding value. If you can look to present maybe a business case that's safety related, but if you can understand how to present it in terms that everyone in that room is going to understand, finance, HR, fleet, whatever it may be, you're pulling stuff together, you're adding extra value there. I think a lot of people just look at safety as a very narrow window. It's all about making things safer on the shop floor or for the operation. I think as safety people progress, you've got to understand, well, actually, to get maybe your messages over, and this is about understanding how to speak to people, it's about learning what the value is to maybe your finance director who's got no real interest in that as a in his day-to-day life. That's what I was saying, that there's the value, and you're not going to get that from an EBOS qualification or an IOSH badge. You're going to get that from experience, from learning from other people, and maybe stepping outside of a comfort zone that certain safety people might be in. I don't feel like a traditional safety person, because I'm not one. I'm self-taught. So I don't know what I'm doing is necessarily all right. But, you know, for the past 10 years, it seems to be going all right to me. So I don't know how you should really be. I've just gone with, well, this is what I think it should be based upon what I've done before. But I've always looked at other people around me, like people who are maybe my bosses who weren't safety people. They were, you know, maybe a manufacturing director or a HR director. And I've learned from them. And that's the value you can bring if you can step outside of safety and make it in a context. I think that there's real value.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Because speaking personally from us, like it made... We as the MD of the company, whatever, but like us as a company, which is basically me and my wife, like kind of struggled in the beginning to like get our messaging right. What are we trying to achieve? Who are we trying to talk to? Which it sounds like woolly sales, Simon Sinek bullshit, right? But like there is some value to it. And I know me and Sam, and I don't want to go down a business route, and I'm not, like, because me and Sam spoke about this on the quarterly co-host for quite a lot. But it actually, what you were talking about in that page and that thing, and what you've just said and what we were talking about, once we got that aligned with us as a company, it was like, oh yeah, okay, this makes it so much easier now to focus on what we're doing and where we're putting our time and justify stuff for ourselves as well. So like a lot of companies we were coming through, they were like, in early doors, they were like, can you do I don't want to mention the name of the, can you do this accreditation scheme? Yeah. And I was kind of like, yes, I can do it. I've done it before, but I don't want to do it.
Okay.
But then I repositioned it in my head when I had this kind of realization, and that through a project we're doing with another company where that customer said something, he's like, look, James, I've got all these RAMs and stuff that I do, and I can't not have them because I need them to tender for the job, but they're generic, and I know they're generic, and I know they don't work in reality. So I want to put this to one side, keep doing it, but I want to change how we look at that. I want us to think that it's like tender process. It's like tendering safety stuff, basically, right? And then we've got shop floor safety. And I was like, as part of this whole conversation, working with that customer and really thinking about risk flow and rebound safety and what we're trying to do, I was like, fuck me, that's it.
Yeah.
Has value for the company, but it's clutter to the shop floor. So it doesn't mean we can throw it out. Yeah. It just means we protect the shop floor from it. So how we now pitch it to our customers, when they say, can you do it? I'd say, yeah, we'll not only do it, I want to completely take it off of your hands. Why? Because I can do it quicker and I can do it better. And I can have you spending your time focusing on actual risk management.
Correct. And what is wrong with that? I say nothing is wrong.
Nothing.
I think that, but that's added value.
Yeah.
And I think I've met lots of people who are afraid of that.
Mm-hmm.
Afraid of maybe admitting that, or even, you know, accepting that's part of the role. Mm-hmm. to add that value somewhere, because that way you can integrate yourself more as well with other companies, because you can get siloed dead easy. I've worked with people who, you know, you should, in our role, you should know a lot of people, and a lot of people should know of you. Like, you know, the company I work at the moment, big company, I can't get around everywhere, but I do videos like every 2 weeks, and people know who I am, and that's good. I've got a guy who works with me who goes out on the coal face, and they see him a lot. But I there's nothing to be afraid of that, of adding that, but I'm recognizing how you add value, because it can enhance what you offer.
Yeah,
and that's where the sales side of it come in. Because if we were talking sales, marketing, this is what people do. It's almost like, you know, bringing that element to the role. It isn't just about keeping people safe, stopping people doing stuff, whatever. It's not just about that.
Do you think to be able to do that, you have to accept within yourself that safety cannot be the top and slash first priority of the organization, that it's not as simple as that, that there's multiple priorities? Do you think, can you have that realization of some of the work I do actually adds no value to the safety of work? And could you do that and also think that safety must be the top priority? Here's a little simplified example of how you could use computer vision to proactively kind of identify things in the workplace as kind of learning opportunities without that kind of bureaucratic, slow, drawn out process of reporting and then Dale reporting and so on and so forth. Because really what computer vision is vision, right? It's like an extra pair of eyes. But it's not got someone sitting watching that CCTV all day going, meh. So here's a really simplified version of how you could use it from the white paper produced by Protex AI, that's AI's role in promoting a proactive safety culture. Computer vision identifies packaging that's often left by the entrance to the store on Monday mornings. The safety team reviews the selected video clips with the workers. Key point there, with the workers. So the AI has gone, this always happens on a Monday. There's something there. So it's a specific thing. So if your safety walk is only on a Tuesday, you're never going to see this. So the AI has spotted it. That was my first observation of this simple kind of story or situation. So the safety team gets the workers in and we start to have a discussion. They explain that there are too many deliveries on a Monday morning to unpack and clear away at the same time. So the health and safety manager shows the computer vision evidence to the operations manager, along with the feedback and so on from the teams. And then the deliveries are spread across 3 days, making it easier for them to manage the packaging. So you can see, as a really kind of simple way of how this can help. Not only is that computer vision, that AI partnered with your CCTV, has kind of spotted up a trend. Oh, we've got a trend here. We're really good on the other days, but we're not on Mondays. And that's something I think would be really easy for us to miss in a workplace, because it's only at a specific time and a specific place. So you've got to be in that specific place on that specific day at that specific time for you to spot that. The likelihood of that is very low. So the AI, the computer vision, has kind of done the work they needed to do, spotted a trend, pinged it up to you. You're able to get the team in and go, oh, look at this. This is what we're talking about on Mondays. This is happening. What's the sitch, peeps? And they're like, oh, well, deliveries are just mad on Mondays. We cram them all in on Monday. It's like delivery day, and it's just nuts. We haven't got time to clean this guy. Boom, learning opportunity. Just a very simple example of how having those extra set of eyes and you having the right attitude and approach to be able to use that as a learning opportunity can help you constantly, constantly improve, constantly learn, become a learning organization, and start having that presence of positives. So you're just constantly doing stuff. I really like it, and I really like this example to just really clearly and concisely go, oh yeah, I get how that works now. So I took that out of Protect AI's white paper that you can download. The link is in the description. It's called AI's Role in Promoting a Proactive Safety Culture. For me, this is all about becoming a learning organization, collecting that data, having all of that tech help you spot trends so that you can take that and learn from it. It's just increasing all of those constant learning opportunities. So go to the link in the description below, have a read. It's an easy read. There's some really cool little chunks in there. There's loads of stuff that you can learn from this paper. It's not overly academic or anything like that. It's a really simple, easy read. There's some good takeaways in there. And I think there's some really good takeaways in there regardless of your take on vision or not. So make sure you use the link in the description below and read the white paper, peeps. Can you have that realization of some of the work I do actually adds no value to the safety of work? And could you do that and also think that safety must be the top priority?
I think if you think that, you are naive to the realities of the world of work. And I'll go so far, mate, just to say, and this is true, just to say this, there is a chapter in my next book, which is called Safety First, My Arts. It isn't. It's maybe as important as other things, but the sole purpose for certainly, you know, commercial enterprises is to make money and to generate customers. That's it. Safety is a part of that. Quality is a part of that. But to come out there and say safety first, that is bollocks, because it isn't. Not first. It could be equal amongst those other things, but I think you're naive if you just think that. And it's I think your message is lost if you purely think that. It can be as important, but I don't agree with that. And companies that say it, you'll generally find are the ones that, you know, suffer because of it.
I understand the notion behind it. I get what you're saying.
I do.
And so many people, like particularly customers, feel really uncomfortable when I'm saying, I want you to tell me, admit to me that safety is not first. And they're like, but I care about my people. They're two different things. There's a difference between caring about your people and saying that safety is fair. So if you care about your people, yeah, that's why I care about their safety. Safety is my top priority. All right. So you're going to work so hard on safety, you're going to invest in everything that the company goes bust, and now I can't feed my family. No. Is that just as bad? It feels just as bad.
I think it's worse. I think, you know, safety should sit at the table. You see more and more, you know, senior roles available where people in from a safety background are sitting on and having influence at that kind of level. You know, I think just the same as you see maybe HR doing the same, maybe these sort of support functions having value. But I think if you come out with your mask there saying it's safety first, I think your message gets lost, because it's as important as the other elements.
And because you've got, you know, Go on.
You've just got to integrate with that. Otherwise, you become siloed.
It's the nature of business, right? Business is multifaceted. There's loads of different priorities. You wouldn't have an accountant, the HR, on operations, whatever. You wouldn't have them on the board being like, no, I am the top priority. Like now maybe as a company, you have a loose priority where one might say that it's a problem. But like ultimately, sometimes you can have quality as your top priority as a company, but sometimes the customer's not paying you enough to justify a high quality product. So you either make a decision. Do we go with that? And so it, for me, it's more about having risk-based conversations and accepting that everything is risk-based.
And that is somewhere else in the book.
We're just writing your book here.
No, in this one, I say take a risk-based approach from it. I look back there on policing, mate. If safety was first, we'd never do anything. You'd never lock anybody up. You'd never go into anyone's house. You'd never, you'd never stop a car. You just wouldn't do it. It's not first. It's important. It's as important. It's a very important thing, yes, obviously. It's as important, but so are other things. And I think that message is just diluted, and that's very old. I think it's old fashioned.
Yeah. Cool. Right. Let's move on to one of the other points that you had. I liked how you mentioned this and then kind of just was like moving on, because I felt like you were like, I don't want to get all these academics ringing me and being like, oh, that's not technically correct. Right. Here you go. So I'm saying it anyway. Here goes nothing. Heinrich's triangle model doesn't work anymore. I'm not getting into explaining what this is. If you're reading this and don't get this bit, use that well-known search engine that rhymes with noodle. There it is. talk to me about, I've got some thoughts on this, but talk to me about your thoughts so that it doesn't work anymore. So
I don't think we can use a model that's now nearly 100 years old to accurately reflect the modern world of work. I think if you look into a bit of how that model was produced, you will quickly see the evidence that it was generated from is flawed. And I genuinely don't agree that, so many 100 near misses predicates, a fatality. And I think if you look at all the big and major incidents that have ever happened, there's two things I always say there is. One is that a lot of them had all the bells and whistles and all these certificates that people seem to chase it under the sun, yet they still killed a significant amount of people. And B, if you're telling me that, you're spotting things on the shop floor all the time, is in some way going to predict that one day you're going to have a fatality, I just can't see how that ever ties together. Because I say it in the book, mate, and sometimes people just do crazy shit that you're never going to be able to predict. And I just find modelling like this to be a little bit sort of doesn't sit easy with me. And I've worked in a lot of places where they try and rely on this, and I've just moved them away from it. It's much better, I think, to be much more proactive and rely much more on, do more of the proactive stuff, the good stuff, and you will see the correlating fall in accidents. I think that is a much simpler model, and it's one that speaks to me. So that, I put it in there for a reason. No one's ever, apart from you, is picking up on it. Has to be. No one's ever really sort of come back to me on that. But I studied it when I did my qualifications, and I thought, right, don't get this at all. And then went to put it out, use it in practice, and thought, gap doesn't make any sense to me. This.
So I find this a fascinating topic, Heinrich's triangle, right? Because it's, if you follow the journey of it, it was like the cornerstone of safety. Like the HSE used to have it on their fucking website. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was everywhere. And then all of a sudden, it fucking disappears off a HSE website, and everyone starts saying it's stupid and all of this stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, then fine. So I was like, okay, apparently it's stupid. I'm just going to not talk about it anymore. And And then if you listen to podcasts, and anyone that proper does this, will know I'm like a Carsten Busch super fan. I think he's great. As an academic, I suppose, but also a practitioner, and just all round nice guy, really. But ultimately, if you were to look, I think if I remember rightly, and I might be not getting this 100% correct, but there's only about four people, I think, roughly speaking, four or five. There's not a lot of people that have done a huge in-depth amount of proper research into Heinrich's work.
Right.
Carsten has done the most of any of them.
Okay.
So there's no one that's done more research, but so that's why they call him, his like tagline on LinkedIn is like the Indiana Jones of safety. He's like the historian of safety, right? So he's done this massive amount of research on like trying to really answer the question, what was Heinrich trying to say? And when you listen to, and you'll never read his book because it's supposed to be an academic book. So the publishers have priced it like a fucking £200 a book. I said to Carsten, I'll read it one day if you send me it for free, but I ain't paying that price for anyone's book. I don't give a shit who you are. His other book, which is not about Heinrich's triangle, or it's about culture, but it's nowhere near as expensive. So you can buy that one. And I do think that is a good book. Anyway, long story short, I do think there's one thing that we all need to remember when we look at any model. All models are wrong, but some are useful. I have no idea who said that, but somebody told me, I heard it and I was like, fuck me, that's good. I might get that tattooed on my body and I don't like that. All right. So when I listened to Carsten basically summarize his findings, I took away a couple of things. One, the model that was sold to all of us was not Heinrich's original intention.
Yes.
Heinrich's original intention is basically what he's trying to say is that there are things that happen in the workplace that signal that you might have problems. So you cannot apply a triangle, e.g. those numbers. The numbers were just a representation to make it easy for you to understand. Yeah. Like bearing in mind, he was trying to talk to operational people, not safety professionals. So completely different audience, which you've said here in that it's 100 years old, whatever, right? So it's completely different world. So then you've got him fucking trying. Oh, right. My daughter's got the piano on. I was like, what the fuck is that noise? completely throwing me off. But so you have to bear in mind the audience was different, as you said, 100 years old, right? But we applied that triangle across a whole organization, which Heinrich never intended us to do.
No.
So he was like, if you have, we were like, if we have 100 slips, that might mean we're going to have a fire.
Mm.
How does that fucking make sense? If we have 100 chemical problems, we might have a machine incident. How the fuck does that work? They're not related. So basically, one of the things I took away from Carsten's work was, and there's a lot more than this, but one of the big things I took away that if you are going to use it, you kind of use it for each risk type. So if you've got, you're kind of looking for connections.
Yeah.
I think that's the important thing. You're having shitloads of near misses. It's like, where's the connection? So if we then put that triangle onto something like Bradford Football Stadium fire, right? Loads of housekeeping problems, right? Then we've got a timber frame building that was dilapidated. Yeah. Then we've got the fire exits being chained up. These are all kind of near misses in a way, right?
Yeah.
And if you look for the connection, you might then go, if we insert an ignition source into that, we might have a fatality.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think what Heinrich's trying to say is you're getting loads of signals. And some of them are near misses, if we want to call it. I'm not sure I'm happy with that phrase, but let's stick with it because it's one that everyone knows.
Yeah.
We get loads of signals on the shop floor. Sometimes we have accidents, which is a really strong signal. Right. And if you're getting a lot of those, it's likely you're going to fucking kill someone. That, for me, is kind of all Heinrich was trying to say.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
Yeah, that is an interesting way of looking at it. I just didn't It just didn't speak to me. What the model that did was the Swiss cheese one, the James Rees and what, and we
which is the next thing I highlighted in
a minute. And that, you know, and that's defences in depth. And I think if you look at something, let's say, you know, you said the Bradford Fire there. I think if you look at that and apply that in that model, I think that to me, and I explain risk in that way to people. I the amount of times I've drawn, you know, that kind of model on a board, and I'd be, oh, you know, that's more, I think, how I go about it. That it never, and that was just on the page, from you just jumped out on the page. I looked at that triangle for ages and went, if I can't like apply it or it doesn't make sense, I can't look to sell it myself to anyone, and it never really spoke, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of that. All models are wrong and some are helpful. It kind of means if it doesn't make sense to you, why fucking use it? Like, if you can't communicate it to your internal customer or external customer, don't use it. Yeah. So for Heinrich Triangle, I don't really use it, but it tends to come up a lot. It's well known, right? Like, a lot of people get it. So we have to more often than not have to just like repurpose it in a way.
Because I think if you, so, you know, you'll get people trying to like, well, we're not doing enough near miss reporting, and you know, we're gonna miss something. But if you start like KPIing people to put near misses in, you'll get like there's a bag of crisps on the floor or something, or there's a puddle outside. You'll just get shite. Coming through, and it adds no value. So I never look at that. I never, you know, use it as that to sell that. I always use the other model as a better way of selling risk, really, or risk management.
Yeah. And I think when we look at, so there was another point that I highlighted in the book, which you've already brought up, about the Swiss cheese model. Swiss cheese model for me is a really good model. I really like it. I think if we look at modern new view resilience engineering, a lot of them talk about the presence of safety and stuff like that. For me, that's what James Reason was trying to say. Defenses in depth is like the presence of effective risk management. I think that was right then. I think it's right now. I do think there are some flaws in how we've utilized it, in my opinion. I think we use it too narrow. I'd be interested on your thoughts on this. Like, we've kind of come up with a model that we use internally for dealing with kind of things that happen in the workplace. So we kind of break down into four kind of loose categories of contributing factors to performance, basically, like organizational factors, which is typically what we see the layers of safety described as, like admin, engineering, training, things like that, things that the organization drive and predominantly resource and so on, like guarding, blah, 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 PPE. And we see the slice of the cheese, right?
Yep.
But then we also have like the situational things that happen. So like the weather on the day, the team on the day, the attitude within that team, the customer on site, the condition of the site. So for me, there are another load of layers of cheese. And then you've got the human factors, so like that person's attitude, their knowledge, their competence, their, you know, biases, all of this stuff is another set of layers. And then you've got the cultural stuff, which is really hard to see and feel. And most often, more often than not, I feel like just not helpful to talk about cultural stuff most of the time. But ultimately, you have the company's norms. So if that's a positive thing, then it's a layer of cheese. You've got the, you know, the company's kind of unsaid priorities, if that's a positive thing. You've got the presence of psychological safety. That's another kind of cultural, if you want to put it in there. So like, I feel like we could did it too narrow. Like when the Swiss cheese model was taught to me, it was very much like, do some guarding, have a risk assessment, get a permit to work, wear some PPE, which I think has caused a little bit of the problem that you see particularly in construction, of like, let's just wear PPE anyway, because it's another layer of safety. It's another defenses in depth. And I'm like, fuck off. It's just over the top. Like, nothingness. I think we've gone a bit too far with it because we were so naively focused on it, or narrowly focused is probably the better way to say it.
Yeah, you're probably all right there to a degree, certainly with the PPE bit in that sector, which it is unique to that sector, really.
As one much put it.
But I just think as a model, it's just easier to sell, and it just made more sense to look at it like that, and I've had much more success that way rather than just sort of, you know, here's a triangle. When I see the triangle, my heart sinks because I just don't believe it. But the risk, that model, the Swiss cheese model, I think it makes more sense to me.
Yeah, I like it. I do like it. I think it's a good one. Right, let me pick out some of the other points I said. I'm trying to.
You've really read this, haven't you? I am impressed. I've got to say, you know, I know you folded a page down or whatever. You know,
look, you've
done well, haven't you?
You're giving me shit because I only fold. Normally, I would highlight and write notes and shit, but I didn't. I couldn't take a pen into the bath, obviously. So.
To be fair,
normally I would. If I'm reading a book, I'd have my highlighter, my pen and everything. But I must have got in the bath and forgot it and thought, fuck it, I'm not getting back out of the bath.
Yeah.
I thought I'm gonna see if I can spark some thoughts out of this. The problem is I've folded the corner and I'm trying to fucking work out what bit of that page I was trying to refer to.
Oh, right.
That's my chat.
What page is it? See if I can help you out. I've got my own copy, look.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, let's do that. We can do like a live read. Page 61.
Why not?
Page 61, I'm struggling to work out what bit I was referring to. It's going to, the bit whilst we're working it out is going to be a really shit podcast.
Nice.
Yeah, this is a really shit podcast. Sherry will have to cut the silence here.
Well, we're like, yes, dead air is a crime, as they say, Alan Partridge. Yes, this is all about communicating all the time and being present, sort of, you know, all as much as possible. Someone's asking about, you know, what your sort of strategy is, and it's just about being around as much as possible.
I know where it is. I've got it. It was this bit which I really liked. It was quite. I'm going to square it now. There, look. Took some notes now. It was this bit I put up, which I remember thinking, actually, it's a real simple way of communicating something that I think is, by academia, overcomplicated. So I'm talking about like organizational drift as a theory, workers done, workers imagined, and all of that stuff. And I read this and I was like, fuck me, yeah, that's a really simple way of like explaining that, which I really liked. And you put in here, you know, what I meant was, I'm not so you were asked kind of what's the strategy, and you said be present as much as possible. And you put, what I meant was not policing, but maintaining a kind of constant presence all over the company's activities.
Yeah.
Then you put knowing people and knowing what is really going on. And I thought, well, fuck me, that's just such a great little way of saying workers done, workers imagined. Like knowing the people, which I work with customers all the time, being like, yeah, how well do you really know your people? Yeah. Like, do you know the team well enough to know that mother or father is absolutely knackered, stressed, and not focusing on the company right now? Or do you have this LinkedIn police relationship where you're like, that's your personal life and I got nothing to do with that, and this is professional, so I don't care what's going on at home. But home does impact work, and work does impact home. They're interconnected. And I thought the knowing people hits that for me, like the building positive relationships that can create visible, can make unknowns visible, or at least a little bit more visible. And then the next bit, knowing what's really going on, I think is probably one of the biggest challenges that most leaders have. And the bigger the company is, the harder that gets. That's why I folded the corner of this page.
And that you will not see that in any safety qualification anywhere mentioned anywhere. You won't. You'll see organizational drift maybe, but you won't see it spoken like that. And that is, this role or is about relationships. It's about knowing people, and this is where I come back to full circle, being able to get on with somebody and speak to somebody. I don't have conversations with people like about safety. We'll talk about that maybe in the middle or maybe at the end, but I'll talk and I know like who they are, a bit about who they are, maybe what their wife or their partner's name is, or what they, like you say, what football team they support. I'll find them in somewhere that will talk about anything and establishing a relationship. And then we'll have a bit about that. And then they'll start to relax and tell me, you know, actually what is going on. And the guy who worked for me, he's really good at that as well. That's why he's come with me from the previous company. He's come with me to this role because he's just dead good at speaking to people as well, you know, on the shop floor, which is where he operates. And that is what it's about. You won't, and that's where that lad yesterday who I've started to mentor. You don't get more technical qualifications, mate. Start like developing your social skills, your personal skills. Because he said something about, oh, I often end up almost having a fight with people on a site. I said, that's wrong, mate. That's wrong. And he sort of put it down to maybe his age, because he's only a young lad. But I said, it's not just that. Maybe it's how you're coming across and how you're sort of going about things.
Because I remember what I felt like off the back of doing my new boss general. And I came, and I, this may be a combination of the qualification and how it was delivered to me back in the day. And this was over a decade ago now. So it's a fucking long time ago. The world has changed. I don't know. Might have changed, might not. But I remember coming off that new boss course and felt fucking empowered. Like, I know better than everybody. I am the police officer of this workforce and you must listen to me. And then going into an engineering workshop on the manufacturing site that I was based on and trying to tell these guys that have been doing this shit for about 30, 40 years that I know better, you can imagine how the conversation went. And I was lucky that, as you picked up, I can talk. I love talking to people. I love connecting with people, you know, and I love building relationships naturally. I'm quite a people person, except I do wish sometimes that I could give I wish I could do like a PQQs for people. Like, before I commit too much to sitting down at a table with you, can you just fill out this questionnaire to say if I do want to talk to you for any longer than an hour?
Yeah, but vetting people.
Yeah, I really do think that's a thing. Like, if we could just vet people, like I was saying this morning, have you ever watched The Boys on Amazon?
Yeah.
Like, that's crude as anything. And I feel like I would have a prerequisite of, do you want to sit down and talk to me? Yes, I'd love to. Do you like The Boys? Oh, no, I thought that was terrible. Yeah. We might as well not talk. But anyway, I do remember coming off the back of that knee bosh, and I'd been kind of, brainwashed isn't the right phrase, but I had come away feeling like that, which is worrying, which is why I thought this book is a nice gateway to that next world of safety, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And that's probably, like, I never really gave it a great deal of thought at where it would be, you know, what's the market audience. I didn't give any real thought to that. It was just something I wanted to do. A few people have picked that out and said, well, I bought it and I passed it on to me, you know, the junior member of staff. And I think that's great. Pass it on to whoever you want. If you're talking about, you know, here's a tale from about how you can, you know, when you first qualify. So the first person I ever arrested, I was 21, took them in. Like, you go to the training school and you have about 2 years of training, very intense and all the rest of it. So, but then you have the reality, and it's the first one you take in, like, on your own, because you spend 10 weeks with shadowing somebody else when you're actually out on the street. And then if you're all right, you're passed off and off you go. So the first fella I ever locked up on my own and took him in, he knew more about what was going to happen next once we got through the holding cell than I did, because I'd never done it. And you're talking about feeling like, you know, like empowered. You come out of the training school thinking you know everything, and then you realize really quickly you know nothing. And it's, you know, it's stuff like that. You can't teach all this in a book. And there was a big gap in it. And teaching it is becoming more and more interesting to me. So I'm potentially, as a sort of on top of my full-time role, going to start doing some lecturing, delivering some of the more well-known safety qualifications for a local college. And because I've done a bit sort of ad hoc in my last place. And if you can present it in a certain way, I would look to present it in this way about how you're actually going to go about and actually put this into practice. Because lots I've met consultants, you know, we've worked for sort of major clients of ours who just cannot speak to people.
You know,
just, you know, it's like, ooh, that's very textbook. And the way they'll write an email and you think, you know, your message is lost. And that's predominantly where I sort of came at.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really like that, mate. And that's why I thought the book worked really well for that. There was an interesting bit here. Like, I don't know how much you know about nudge theory. Have you ever heard of nudge theory?
Yeah. Yeah.
And one version of a nudge would be, I never say this word right, but reciprocity, basically where you give something and you're creating a feeling of, well, I feel obliged to do something for that person now. So
yeah,
it's utilized a lot in your Happy Meal, you know. Everyone thinks that, you know, or you get a toy, it's kind of like we're telling you you're going to get something. You don't buy, like, it's a nudge, it's an incentive in a way, but maybe that's not a good example. But like when companies give you something a little bit for free, so taster of the company, but also it's like you feel obliged to give them a little bit more. And you give a story of how you kind of quite subtly done it about the ice cream and the chocolate when you got on site, which I'm like, oh, I'm just fucking bribing people. Like, it's more in depth than that, isn't it? It's more subtle in that. It's not just bribing people. It's like building relationship again, isn't it?
It is. Two magnums and a calypso, that is. And that is a true story. Imagine what it's like when you're trying to get people to give you information. So like when I was in the CID, for example, if you're trying to sort of ask people to speak to you and tell you stuff, maybe confidentially, they're not going to just do it because they, you know, they're good citizens. You've got to be realistic now. They're going to want something in return. And that could be something like, and I'm being serious here, you know, you've got people who've been arrested and maybe are getting charged, and they're going to want a deal. They're going to do a deal with you for information. And that happens. It's a reality. It does happen. So you've got to learn how to operate like that. And it is about, you're talking about incentivizing stuff. It, again, it's a reality. Accept it. It's not a bribe, but on a lighter level, it is just about relationships. And if you can use little tips and little tricks to make things more human, use them. Don't be afraid of that. You know, don't be afraid of it. It's not, you know, some people that would be frightened to death by that. I thought nothing of it. I thought nothing at the time. I do it again. I have done it again. I do it with my own, you know, my own team. I do it with anyone just to, and it's not a cynical thing. It's not a sort of like, you know, I'm really thinking about this. It's just a way of just being, starting a relationship to move forward with, and that's what it is, and that's how to, in my opinion, get the best results.
And interestingly, like when I was doing some training the other day, and we're due to start. It wasn't a training; it was more like a workshop. It was like a kind of learning exercise in a way, in depth, heavy kind of. You're involved, you're going all day, and it's all day.
Yeah.
And they're running late. And they were like, what, half an hour late? It's already a tight schedule. Like, to be honest, it probably should go more than one day, but the company didn't want to do that. So, okay, cool, that's fine. We'll do a slim down version and cram as much as we can in for this day. It's a busy day. So we've lost half an hour. One guy walked in visibly pissed, like not drunk pissed, like visibly angry. Well, not angry, but he just wasn't happy. Yeah. And then walked in and he said something about like, it was something like, oh, I ain't got time for this in a way. Like it was kind of like that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's nice of you to say, thanks for being late and then coming in and say it. But like, I kind of said in a little bit of a jovially bantery way, something like around those lines. And anyway, and he bit back at it. Like he didn't like it and he bit at it. And I was like, okay, cool. And in my head, I was like, this guy needs some, like I need to give him something. And where I'm going with this, you don't have to give people things like a chocolate bar. Sometimes people just need time. And they need someone to listen to them. So I said, how are you doing, mate? And he's just, I'm busy and this and that and this. And, you know, they expect me to get all this done. They expect me to get all that done. And then they just take me off the site for the whole bloody day. Like, how am I supposed to run my bay? And I was like, bloody hell, mate. I just needed some time, like somebody to listen to. And I think that's very much the same as what you said earlier in the podcast, where I'm just talking to people, not about safety, talking to people about them, listening to them, hearing them, whether that's about work or not about work. It's really powerful. Me and that guy got on like house on fire all day, and he was the best person in that room.
There you go. And that is about, you know, you've had some empathy there, you've connected with him, and you'll find that little interaction there could have gone really, really badly. It could have gone really, really bad, couldn't it? If you'd have been a certain way. There's a psychological model called Batari's box. I don't know whether you've heard of that ever. It's your behavior affects my behavior affects your behavior. And if you're anything into like conflict management or anything like that, it's used often in sort of like the military and policing. And it's how you go about your first interaction with what could often be conflict because of the nature of the interaction. And if you go at like a certain level, that person's going to either meet you at that level and you're going to clash, or they're going to go the other way. And it's all about that sort of psychology around it. And I muck around, but I am actually quite well read and I understand a lot of this stuff and I've used it. And that's what it is about. And you just give a really good example there of that interaction. He's come in with a certain sort of mindset. You could have been a complete knobhead to him and you know, been dealt with that in a very different way. And you probably lost your best person in that room at the time by giving him a bit of space and a bit of time, not at all, and talking about something completely different. That's your buy-in. So, you know, on that hot day when it was boiling hot, and you know, they were let's have an ice cream and a chat. You know, it could have been anything. It might, you know what I mean? It's just something else to get somebody, just to have an interaction with somebody. You've done it there. That's Batari's box, that is.
How do you say that? Batari?
But Batari, Botari, I think it is. And it is about this behavioural...
Batari box.
The theme is your behaviour affects my behaviour.
My attitude affects my behaviour, affects my attitude. Quite nice and simple, that, isn't it? I like that.
Well, I don't do anything other than that because, you know, if it isn't simple, it doesn't work. And when I've like mentored people and I've had people in my team and we talk about, you know, how to sort of go about sort of safety work, and I often use that as a sort of, you know,
you could draw that. So just for the audience that can't see it, you've got my attitude in a box with an arrow that says, that points to affects my behavior, affects your attitude, affects your behavior, which affects my attitude. And you could draw that like a fucking tornado, couldn't you? Like you could literally spiral out of control. And that example with that guy in that training, like, I was pissed off. We're half an hour late and this guy just walks in here like with no empathy to like my fucking position. And in split second, I was very close to being like, don't be a dick, mate. Like, have some respect. Like, I'm trying to do my job as well. I appreciate, but it's my business. I was kind of like, I need to make this a success. And it forced me to stop and think about how I react to this, which was really helpful.
But it could have gone the other way.
Totally, very close to going the other way. Very close.
And they teach that in policing and in the military, in those interactions where it could go bad and somebody could get injured, somebody could even get killed. Mm. If you one wrong move, one wrong, even a word, it's all about sort of your nonverbal communications as well, and how a interaction could very quickly end up in a completely different scenario. When I was younger, I would often reflect on, because why I've ended up rolling around the floor with somebody trying to lock them up, when perhaps another, a word that was said differently, or maybe even a look, or even maybe even how I approached something and how I looked or anything, it could have ended up in a different scenario. And there's a lot to that. And I've learned that over 20 years, that sometimes when people sort of come at you with that, you just take a step back and realize, well, there might be a reason why they're thinking that, and that's Batari's box. It only took me 20 years to sort of get it,
I was on a different site with a different customer, and I spent an all day with this guy, and they had one of their guys had screwed up and damaged a bit of site and of a customer. So the customer complained, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I'm just going to pop and see this customer, like five minutes down the road. What do you want to do? And I was like, well, to be honest, mate, like, if you go, it's not much I can do. I'll just be kind of sitting here. I was like, I'm interested to see one of your customer sites. I also wanted to see how he was going to deal with this situation, because I kind of build a relationship with this person as well, seeing how they respond to somebody making an error within their organization. So I was kind of like, I want to come with you and observe. So I went with him. We got on site, and he explained to me, he's like, oh yeah, you want to talk to Bob, right? So I just go and get Bob. And Bob walks over with like body language, like, and instantly I was like, this is going to go down. I was like, and then in that split second, I was like, this doesn't look good. Like, there's two of us. And we've turned up after in already a tense situation. I was like, I'm fucked up. I should not be here. I think it's made it look worse by me being here. I thought the only thing that might save us as a collective was like, I was quite professionally dressed. So like, I wasn't dressed like a, I don't know, like I was thinking maybe he'll look at me and go, this guy's not going to have a fight. Do you know what I mean? And I was thinking, shit, like, it's about to go down. And the guy came over and he was like, oh, hi, lad. Sorry, I don't like to complain. And I was like, fuck me, your voice and personality is very different. Like, he walked over like he was going to fuck shit up. And then when he got there, he was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't like to complain. And I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much.
It's perception. It can be stereotyping people, whatever you want to call it. But there's a lot to do with that, and the psychology of that is very, very interesting to me, because I find some people I know seem to have a really hard time at work, really hard time with people and those kind of with professional interactions, and it just seems to have it tough. And others seem to be able to get on with people a bit easier and still be in a position where there, you have the conflict to manage, and our role often there is conflict. But there's a way of doing it, I think, and a way of sort of, and it is about being able to interact with people, and there's a lot to it. And I think that's really where I was sort of coming from with that.
Nice, mate. It's been a pleasure talking about the book, actually. I quite enjoyed the relaxed style. We're going to have to cut out a bit of dead silence whilst we're both trying to find the bit in the book. but I enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming on. If people want to get the book, I'm going to put a link in the description, but best place to buy it, Amazon, I suppose.
Yeah, it's only on Amazon. Yeah, you can get it from there. Paperback and ebook.
Awesome. And like I say, very easy read. It's not crazy priced either, I don't think, is it? It's relatively cheap. And you can read it in two baths.
You can read it in two baths. You can read it on a sun lounger, as somebody puts, or on a train. Most importantly, you can read it and maybe take something away from it.
Cool. And I enjoyed it, mate. I think it's very much a gateway book from health and safety into kind of relationship, people centered safety. So cool. I quite liked it. Yep, like a mentor on ADHD. There you go, mate. Hopefully that's a compliment and not
of course
it is. Thank you very much. Anything else you want to, if people want to connect with you, best place to do that, LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn. I've got my profile there on LinkedIn and do stuff on there. You know, I'm on a few different platforms and whatnot, but yeah, that's the place. Yeah, have a look at the book but you know, leave a review. I love to read the reviews. It's that you know, makes it all worthwhile.
Nice one. Thank you very much for your time, buddy. It's been a pleasure chatting.
How are you? Bye-bye.
Okay, peeps, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Don't forget to check out all of the links in the description below. You can get Simon's book in the description below. You get Protex.ai in the description below, and you can find out more about us at Rebranding Safety and RiskFluent by going to riskfluentltd.com. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.